right, we are here with episode 466 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. And John, did you forget to send this list to the Emmy voters again? Or, oh, who am I kidding? We just have to give out our own awards.
Yeah, this is Gary, and break open the bubbly, because we've hit the good stuff.
That's right. We are going to be talking about our top 10 from the 2013-2014 season, the end of our wrap-up. And, well, before we get started, I think, Edmund, you should probably give a few disclaimers of some kind, shape or form, whatever.
Certainly. We will be talking about some stuff that might have happened in these seasons that we loved so much. So if you haven't seen them, you... might be spoiled, but given the fact we're doing the best stuff, all of you folks out there should have seen these already anyway.
That's right. And we're going to go ahead then and start with number 10, and that would be The Walking Dead, Season 4, coming in at an 8.3 for the season. And that is down a tenth of a point, so not much of a drop. It's pretty consistent with the third season, but it also represents, by the way, the only show in our top 10 that had any kind of reduction from the season before. So everything that we talk about from here on out is an improvement on last season. So The Walking Dead, Season 4. Gary, what are your thoughts on this or memories of why it came in where it did?
Well, as we opened the season, we started off where everything was rather idyllic. If I remember, we had a farming going on, and it was really nice till the governor came in with his retaliatory force and sort of destroyed their little community that they had started to build up at the prison. So we finally left the prison, and everyone was scattered to the wind after the attack, so we got a lot of small little shows. And maybe that's part of the reason that it dropped down. This has been so much of an ensemble show that we sort of, you know, split up a lot. And while we did get some really nice character pieces, especially Michonne still sticks out in my mind, we didn't have our, you know, group really together until the end of the season. And I think some of that interaction was, you know, pulled the show down a little bit. We've become used to all the characters playing off each other, and we didn't have a lot of that. Everybody had paired off, and so we got these, you know, side trips, so to speak. So maybe now that everyone's back together again and we're going to see them sort of pushing forward, I have hopes for next season. But it was nice. We got a lot more background than I think we had ever had before. We had some interesting characters like Daryl's group that he had tagged up with at one point. While they're not with us anymore, they were rather entertaining for a few episodes there.
Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, I'd agree that splitting everybody up did have a bit of a strange effect on the season, although certainly some of the focus it allowed on particular characters. I mean, Gary mentioned Michonne, and the one for me would be Carol. Melissa McBride really getting a chance to show off her acting chops, both in the first part of the season with her making the that hard sacrifice at the prison, and then Rick exiling her, and then certainly in the second half dealing with Lizzie, and then having to make that sacrifice, which was just I think probably the highlight episode of the season for me. I think the one thing in that first half that got to me a little bit was it just seemed odd the way they handled the governor, bringing him back, seeming to humanize him, and then having him be basically just the same invading force that he was at the end of the previous season. And I wound up wondering why they didn't just take him out at the end of season 3 and just move on from there, because it just seemed to be a rehash of what they'd already introduced, which was then odd after they'd gone through those couple of episodes of reintroducing him and seeming to give him a little more humanity and character, and then just having him revert back to dictator basically.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know that a lot of people felt like this was almost two entirely different seasons. You had the one that was set, the first half that was set at the prison that everybody remembers as being far more amenable, I guess you could say, or higher quality. And then you have the second half of the season that a lot of people remember as being fragmented and not nearly as good. What's interesting is that when you take the scores for the two parts of the season, it's remarkably consistent. Really, it lines right up with the score that it wound up with. So it's almost as if that impression is kind of a false one. The only one who I can say actually where kind of did have a big distinction between the first and second half was actually Gary. So it's kind of telling then that you were the one, Gary, that really focused in on that right away when we start talking about The Walking Dead. But I guess we have... this is one of those shows and one of a couple shows that we're going to talk about where the... they're now at the end of the fourth season, looking at a fifth season coming up, and yet the ratings continue to climb. So this is a show that is certainly not going anywhere anytime soon. In fact, it's one of those rare shows that may end because the creators themselves are done with it versus the viewers. But there we go. All right, moving on then to show number 9. And this one may be a little bit of a surprise to people, but if they heard us and our opinions, it shouldn't be. Being Human, the U.S. version, of course, Season 4. It came in at an 8.3, and that is 3/10 of a point up from the previous season, and easily the highest scored season of the show. Edmund, what are your thoughts on that turn of events?
Yeah, well, this, I mean, certainly we could, the big compare and contrast here was that Being Human pulled off a really stellar final season where they were building on the characters and relationships that they'd built up over the previous three years, and really delivered a very, very strong story. There was just the one little bobble of perhaps going a little bit too far in with Ramona and giving the house its own malevolent personality that they were battling, perhaps they could have focused more on just the characters and the demons that they're wrestling with and helping them come through to some sort of resolution. Of course, with this show, what's nice is that you could say they had happy endings, but they certainly weren't happy endings in the traditional sense. But were very consistent with the whole universe that they'd built up. And of course, there was once they got into that final 6-episode arc, the revelation that basically the cast and producers had negotiated with Sci-Fi to let them go out on their own terms, rather than cutting the budget and trying to stretch it out over into another season, and it was nice to see it work out so well, especially once later in the season we got to see Warehouse 13 stumble so badly with its truncated fifth season. So it was a very nice sign off to a show that I think we have all enjoyed, and to our initial great surprise, being yet another of these British or European retreads, but this was one of the rare cases where it really did build on and wind up exceeding its forebear.
Gary, what would you add to that?
Well, I have to echo a lot of what Edmund said. I thought the Ramona / possessed house thing dragged out a little bit too much, and I wish there was I wish they could have thrown one or two more episodes that didn't relate to that in this last season. But that being said, you know, Sally's time jumps were a really cool mechanism to deal with a lot of the characters' issues and how they saw themselves and where they wanted to be and the regrets that they had. So it was a really useful tool to explore those without being the cheat. Even though things sort of got reset, we got to see them really play out in that alternate timeline for a while, which was nice. So you got your unhappy ending as well as your happy ending in this series. And we could talk at length how this show has exceeded the UK version, but regardless of comparing it to other shows, it was a really fun show. Good to watch, great characters. You know, I really felt connected with these characters. I can't wait to see them at a convention later this year. And it just overall, I always enjoyed watching this show, even with some of the dark material that they covered from time to time, the deaths that were involved. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the way that they examined and freshly examined in a lot of ways. You know, Sally's ghosthood, the vampire life, as well as the werewolf life. I felt they put really original spins on all these different characters, curses or existences. And so it kept it fun and interesting to watch it. And they really didn't fall back on too many old things with it. They enjoyed exploring the whole pack life thing in a way that I hadn't seen werewolves do before. We had, you know, Aiden having to deal with, you know, this whole guilt and history of his vampirism, and with the wife came into the picture for this last season. It was just, they went places that I didn't expect, and I was glad that they went. So overall, great job, and it certainly deserved at least the score that it got because it was so well executed, especially if you do look at other sci-fi shows such as Warehouse 13, where a writer could, you know, fudge this, but instead they went out strong. And even though they sort of snuck it on us at the end that that's what happens, I don't hold that against them.
Yeah, I think that this is really a great example, I think, for anyone who is looking at how shows, the challenges that shows have on sci-fi, and as perhaps shows on a network that is really treated as almost the stepchild, the ill-favored stepchild of the NBC, Universal, Comcast, insert evil corporation here, Wolfram and Hart or whatever else, into this whole mix, that, yeah, I mean, they have certainly demonstrated that they have issues with budgets after a show goes a certain number of seasons. And really, they came right out and said that they could have done a fourth and a fifth season, but it would have been at dramatically slashed budgets. And everyone involved basically said, we'd rather have one season at the current funding, even if it meant taking a pay cut, rather than try to do two seasons at a much reduced capacity and kind of phone it in. And that says a lot, not just about this show, but also a lot about the situation that, say, Eureka and Warehouse 13 found themselves in, where just because of the way that the production breaks worked out, they really didn't have a chance to negotiate that kind of end. They were dealt the hand that they were dealt, and that was it. And, you know, on Eureka's part, I think that they did the best that they could with what they had. I think Warehouse 13, unfortunately, they got too wrapped up in the idea of playing on nostalgia and trying to force an ending rather than let the ending happen organically. But being human, managed to pull it off. I think we can all agree on that. All right, we're going to go ahead then, and rather than talk about a show that is has concluded, we're going to talk about a show that is just constantly seeming to exceed itself.
And that would pick up steam, yeah.
Yeah, Arrow, Season 2. Coming in at 8.5, that's up 0.7 of a point from the first season, and that is a solid score for any show in its sophomore season. And Gary, I know you're not quite up to date.
Well, I did want to just mention something. I'll let you guys go into a lot more detail, but I'd watched the beginning of the first season, and I was honestly not drawn in. And I started watching the end run of the second season, and I noticed such an improvement of characters and storylines that I was really impressed with the development of this show. And I know for a fact I will pick it up for next season completely. And I'm really glad to see how it's developed. I think it's done a little well, other than the voice modulator, but that's a little nitpick. But in general, they've really picked their game up, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And Deathstroke will be having a word with you about not watching the run up until the second half of the second season, by the way. perhaps at a certain con coming later this summer. Edmund, you wanted to, or you should, I think, weigh in here, because you've been watching from the beginning.
Oh yeah, no. Well, this was certainly a case of taking all the things that were strong about the show from the first season and building on them, and there were a lot of weaknesses. As you say, it was up 0.7, so it was still a solid high. It's still a solid high 7 in its first season, but one thing I particularly liked was the way the show was showing evolution in terms of developing the characters and also responding to the stuff that was really working well. I mean, the one thing I'm specifically thinking of, it was integrating Felicity even more into the plot, making her a full part of Team Arrow. And also as the season went along, they were obviously more than happy to play with all of all the Felicity shippers out there who really wanted to see the two of them get together, and even using that as part of the finale. But in terms of the storytelling, introducing Deathstroke and the way they introduced him this season, keeping him off in the shadows and making you think that Brother Blood was the main villain, and then bringing him in revealing him at the mid-season, and then letting him drive the show basically all the way through to the end, was really well done, and certainly the way that then wound up just even further integrating all the flashback stuff back on the island into the main heart of the show. It just felt like a very strong evolution from a good foundation, and it was really really nice to see it develop, and now apparently with looks like it might be a pretty strong spin-off coming off of it too, on top of what they were just doing within the show.
Yes, indeed. And As I'm sure some people know, that the pilot for The Flash is kind of out there, and I had the benefit of seeing it under slightly more legitimate terms, perhaps. But I can safely say that the Arrow franchise is well in hand. Let's put it that way. All right. Well, we're going to take a nice little jump back in the past for the next show, because this is one of those odd shows that, because of when it airs, we're actually a little bit behind the run schedule. But this would be Continuum Season 2, which came in at an 8.6, which happened to be up half a point from the first season. And I know that the third season just wound up, so it's a little bit difficult to perhaps to go back to it. But I can say personally that the second season remains my favorite, and I really felt like it took all the great things about the first season and just ramped them up to another level. Gary, what about you? What are your memories of the second season?
Oh, I agree. They we were we they we they've filled in a lot of plot holes or loops that we had been teasing about throughout the first season, which was nice. And I was a little concerned as they were bringing some things to a close throughout the season. However, you know, towards the end of the season, when they finally started to fracture time a little bit and have duplicates of each other and stuff like that, I realized that they were setting a much grander stage for the season coming up. So like you said, it worked well that it closed up some things and at the same time busted open a whole bunch of other things. I can't ask for more of a show. And I like that they are, I don't want to say breaking their own rules, but changing as things go on. So you really can't become complacent in this show, because if you do, things change and in unexpected ways. So it's constantly keeping you on your toes. So I have to say, I really enjoy the show. I think it's probably the finest science fiction show currently on TV right now.
How about you, Edmund?
Yeah, it that I've liked the way they introduced some of the more mysterious elements with Escher and and then Emily and the whole issue of having her come in as the planted love interest, and of course badass special forces agent type person.
Yes.
you know, but then managed to build that relationship in a believable way, so that it, when it then became the crux of the finale, and Alec's decision to use the time machine to try and save her, it was really a nice unexpected twist to all the things that have been going on, and certainly set things up for what looked to be an intriguing third season. And of course, around this time next year, we'll get to rack our brains for what it was we thought of the third season. So.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. Of course, if they don't get off of their collective humps and actually renew
Yeah.
the show for a fourth season,
Oh,
we may be
geez, what
talking
are they
about the final
waiting
season.
for? Oh, gosh.
I know, right? Well, one thing we're going to be waiting for is for the rest of the content for this particular episode, because we're going to have our mid-show break. The reason that we're doing it after shows 10 through 7, I guess you could say, is that those were the shows that were, well, let's say in the range that our previous top 10 would have been in. All the shows in our top 6 are, they have scores that are higher than our previous top score as of last year. So we've got 6 shows, let me just put that a different way, 6 shows that actually exceeded the top rating last season. That should give some people some pause, because that tells you just how good this season was. I told you before, way back in the first part of this recap, that this was the first time that we had ever had shows that were all above the 6 score. Even the worst show from the past season still was only merely below average. It was not even what we would consider to be disappointing or terrible from that point of view. So this was a banner season in many respects, and the next 6 shows that we talk about are the cream of the crop, to say the least. So stay tuned.
Thank you.
All right, and we are back, and we're going to talk about show number 6. And Edmund, I'm sure that you were hoping this would be just a slightly higher, but it was pretty close. It's really tight up here at the very top, but number 6, The Americans, season 2, coming in at an 8.8. So pretty much tying the previous record. So what are your thoughts, Edmund? I know that we didn't really review or score the first season. It would have been interesting to see the compare-contrast there. But in your mind, how did it compare?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it was, if anything, season 2 would have been on a level or maybe a slight uptick. I really like the way they again, similar to Arrow, but went into a sophomore season, which is often a problematic, especially for a show that sort of broke out at least critically, if not ratings wise or awards wise, in its first season, and really worked on. They were also expanding their universe some into the what was going on in the embassy with Oleg coming in and introducing that new element, and giving Nina even more nuances and uncertainties to play off of. Worked really well. And then this whole element right from the opening episode of this shocking murder of the other directorate S couple, that the two of them had been working with and knew, and so it looked like the beginning of that episode they were perhaps going to start investigating more the family dynamics by having this contrasting couple, and then to have them wiped out. And I know I initially had my fear of oh are they going a little bit more over the top, because in that episode we had not just that assassination, but Philip having to take people out and take the Afghanis out in that restaurant, and it turned out that no, that was just the catalyst for even more explorations of loyalties and how you handle agents and sources as they have to take over the other couple's assets, and then. That continuing that amazing balance between the spycraft and then exploring the marriage and the family dynamics and the two of them getting closer and closer, building on what seemed to be becoming more of a real marriage from the end of the first season, having their problems with Paige, started building on her suspicions from the end of season 1, but then building to that point where they are put in the position of having to protect her from Moscow, but in that very act, right at the end, they're bringing up perhaps once again bringing up their own conflicts between themselves of how what's the right thing to do, and should their loyalties be to their family or to their country, and it was again a really marvelous mix of some really good vintage, good old analog spycraft, and this very deep character studies and exploration of what having to do this work and having to do it in these situations means to real people.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's see. Going on then to a show that we don't have to talk about whether or not they got nominations for the Emmys, because they pretty much dominated. Number 5, Game of Thrones, Season 4, coming in at 8.8 as well, and this is actually a half a point jump for them. So this is definitely the best scored season that they've had so far. And Gary, what are your thoughts? Does that match your opinion, or does it seem a little bit off? Is Gary still there?
Yes. That sits pretty well with my opinion. Even though we're talking about we're into the fourth season already, there's still so much being set up in this world. We're getting so many of the old guard still getting killed off. Some of the newer ones that were expected to take their place are no longer taking their places. And so everything's in such a drastic state of upheaval that it really creates a sort of idea that you don't know where the storyline's going to go. And it keeps you on your edge of not knowing who's going to live and die, because in this world, you don't get the sense anyone is safe. And at the same time, you get these nice little twists and turns and unexpected surprises that just keep going on. Death seems to be, you know, pretty plentiful, and it comes out sometimes when you least expect it. So, you know, you're always wondering what's going to happen. And then you have these, you know, the whole overwhelming arc of the show, which has been stated from the first season about winter's coming, and we're getting more and more of a sense of what that entails, what that means. And it's becoming even more ominous, where it started off as a little, you know, pithy kind of quote. And now we're starting to see how much weight it actually has had in the past and is having in the currently. So it's been a nice build to this larger event as we're dealing with all this minutia about the war between the kings and things along those lines.
Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, I think one major difference to this season was that it felt to me like this was the season where the writers and producers really embraced the fact that they were doing an adaptation. Just aside from the decision to split book three into seasons three and season four, but I think even more than season three in this season, they were much more willing to deviate from some of the stuff that was going on in the books, and certainly playing around with timelines and pulling stuff forward, and also just in terms of the structure of the show, where very often in the previous seasons there was that whole thing of jumping around to all these different characters and plot lines, and feeling that they had to serve at least three or four in every episode. In this season, we had those couple of instances, the Purple Wedding and Tyrion's trial, notably, where they took big chunks of an episode and just kept it in King's Landing, focused on that on those events, and then that was just building up to then having the episode up at the Wall, where it was just that battle. But even though they were doing that at the same time, I still felt like that they were keeping up with all the storylines that they needed to, and in some instances it actually wound up, I think, so serving the story well, where Stannis riding to the rescue at the end really was coming out of nowhere, because we hadn't seen him in so long, but all of the little hints and elements had been dropped into place, so you had one of those cases where the previously on was actually notable for just reminding you that, yes, guys, we know this was may have been six or seven episodes ago, but we did tell you about this. So when it pops up in a few minutes, you're not going to be so surprised or so surprised that you feel it's coming out of nowhere. But aside from the stuff we've come to expect and love, like Diana Rigg and Peter Dinklage just doing some amazing work, which, as you say, John, it did in fact get recognized. It felt like a much better paced story this time around than it did in the previous season.
Absolutely, and I think that one of the things that really stood out to me was that normally, and it's hard to say normally when there's only four seasons, but you get the gist. There's a build up, right? We know that the ninth episode of a season has been kind of put out there as this kind of magical moment in the season when all of the big moments are going to come together. We've seen that happen at least three times before this. And it did, to a certain extent, happen here, too. But this season was different because there were a lot of episodes that had moments that would have easily been the big moment of a previous season. It kicked off with Joffrey and the Purple Wedding. It went right through to, the trial by combat, for instance, what happened up at the Eyrie, the events at the Wall, and then even in the final episode, we had a few big moments, especially at the very end, that will radically change things for the Lannisters. So we've got a lot going on in this season, and consistently so, which I think kept it at a very high mark. And it's going to be very difficult, in my opinion, for season five to maintain that kind of just intensity without really challenging the audience to accept that it's not all about action. It's also about character turns and the Game of Thrones from a political point of view, not just a combat point of view. But hopefully at this point, this is the other show I was talking about that season after season is just getting gobs and gobs of ratings. I mean, if you go from the first season, which was getting maybe what, not even half of what it's getting now, it's still growing. So this show has a lot of legs. All right, let's see. We can move on then to, oh, I'm sure that Edmund will be happy to hear this one. Number four, Person of Interest, Season 3, 8.8, which is an increase of 0.3 of a point. And, of course, that is helped by two big arcs in this season, the first being the much-beloved HR arc, which was the swan song for one of the original main cast members, and then also the big arc at the very end of the season that had an exciting, fitting yet unexpected ending, where instead of the heroes coming out on top, they wound up just trying to basically survive with their skin intact and get out and hide from the bad guys more than actually take them on. And Edmund, I know that you had a lot of praise for this season, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. It you hit on the one of the first major difference, which was rather than saving up their big arc for the end of the season as they had in the previous two seasons, they did do this thing of winding up the first half of the season with HR and with the death of Carter, and also notable with that was having that three-part sort of mid-season finale, where each of the three episodes were their own self-contained story. So you didn't have any of that typical middle episode syndrome, although certainly that was helped by the fact that middle episode did in fact end with Carter's death, and then the third episode was the aftermath of that, and Reese just going completely off the reservation to avenge her death. One thing that was interesting was it was very strong, obviously, but there were still a couple of stumbles, and at the beginning of the season, it felt like they weren't quite addressing or dealing with some of the major revelations that had occurred in the season two finale, with the machine moving itself, what was going on with Root and having to integrate Shaw into the team. That would be the reason why it isn't quite up in the stratosphere. But those were really only minor stumbles, and as the season played out, it became obvious that they were just having to do setup for these much stronger and very powerful arcs that were to come. And also to have a show that went from a season two finale, which was a bit of a mind blower, then to the season three finale, where they just completely blew up the universe they'd created and set things up for an absolutely new and different show next season, but doing it so well that you have absolute confidence that whatever we are about to see and whatever they're up against is going to be fabulous to watch.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see then. And let's not forget that this is a show that has some of the most badass female characters around. Certainly, to the extent that they actually challenge some of the better characters on, say, Game of Thrones or even Continuum. I mean, Shaw and Root just... I want to see that their own spinoff. I just want to see them in a road show where they just, go around to different places and smash things up. But anyway, a show that has ended... and did so in dramatic fashion, and certainly got a... no one's going to be surprised that this is towards the top because of the sheer amount of praise that it got. What's funny is I don't know that any of the people here on the show right now actually watched this show, but there we are. Coming in at number three is Breaking Bad Season 5, which came in at an 8.9, up 0.5 of a point. Which is just insane. But clearly this goes back a bit into the year, but I just remember the huge amount of accolades that this show got in its final episodes. And part of the reason why this feels like it's coming in a bit late is that the final season was split across a couple years, as I recall, and so it's been a while since we've even mentioned it. But
yeah,
there we
are. Well, of course, it was me and Bronze Thumb who were watching it.
Oh, okay, that's why I was...
This whole thing of splitting it into the two 8-episode half seasons, but the way Vince Gilligan and the staff plotted them out, I mean, it really did feel like too many seasons. And when they came back for that second half, I mean, those 8 episodes, it had such extraordinary narrative force, where it was something that characterized the show throughout its run, and then it just finished up like a freight train. I mean, it was quite a ride. And even the little break towards the end when he's up in New Hampshire, didn't have quite as much tension and action. But when you're giving Bryan Cranston a chance to just sit in a room and act, it's still damn compelling. So yeah, but it was the stellar case of a show knowing that it's got an endpoint and shooting for that endpoint and just absolutely hitting the bullseye.
Yeah. Now, certainly I thought that a lot of people were doing compare contrast against the end of Dexter, 'cause it hit right around the same time period, as I recall.
Yes, but there is no comparison.
No, I was just saying just in general. But now there's also supposedly AMC is trying to, as we all know, they're doing this for, The Walking Dead as well, and I'm waiting for the inevitable announcement that they're doing something like this for Mad Men, and I can only imagine what that would turn out to be. But, you know, they're putting together a spinoff called Better Call Saul, and what are your thoughts on that, just very briefly? Are you looking forward to it, or are you scratching your head as to why? Just why?
Well, I mean, I understand why in terms of the notoriety and ratings potential, et cetera. But certainly, given the character of Saul and the fact that it's Bob Odenkirk, who of course did some stellar work on Fargo more recently since Breaking Bad ended, the presumption is this is going to be a much more lighthearted show, not a full-out comedy necessarily. I mean, he is still an ambulance-chasing criminal lawyer. But my presumption is that, yeah, that tonally they're going to try and get well away from Breaking Bad and make it very much its own animal. And I'm presuming a more tongue-in-cheek animal. That Breaking Bad did have some comedic elements to it, but for the most part was. Was a really searing drama that would just rip your heart out at times. And Better Call Saul is going to be something that it's not going to challenge you quite as much.
Now Bronstum is going to be kicking himself that he's not here for this top five. I just guarantee it. As we just get to shows that he loves more and more, and he'll be interested to know that it was really a horse race towards the end here, coming in. Number 2, the penultimate show of our list, Hannibal, Season 2, coming in at 8.9. That is a tenth of a point up from the first season, which, yeah, basically, that was the high mark from last season that all these shows met or exceeded. So, yeah, I know, Edmund, you were the other one who was watching Hannibal.
Sure, that was a case of... taking a first season that was extraordinary in its own right and just building on it, the way they were playing up the mind games between Hannibal and Will, the way Jack was getting drawn into things was just superbly done, and an extraordinary achievement of writing, of acting, of cinematography and production design, and actually, so what it was similar to what I was saying about Person of Interest in terms of the way it ended, coming to a finale that they even foreshadowed it from the beginning of the season, having the major fight be the opening scene, but then the way they got to it and the aftermath of it was so unexpected, and just really shook things up. And in terms of shows that are adaptations, Brian Fuller had said all along that Hannibal the TV show is just meant to be inspired by the Thomas Harris books and movies, and they certainly made that clear in this season, where they've been they were taking these familiar characters and elements, but then doing things with them and eliminating characters that you didn't expect. And just for all the people who went into the show thinking, oh, I know this material, just really upending your expectations and doing it in a very brilliant and very entertaining way.
Indeed. Well, that means that we have one show left. And this is actually the second time that it has been on the top of our list. And I would say that there are a lot of people who say that this was the season that definitely made that mark without reservation. And that would be, number one, Sherlock, season 3, came in at a 9.0, and that is up 0.3 of a point from the previous season. And yeah, this was... the irony of it is that the absolute lowest show on our list, which was the fifth season of Warehouse 13, was a sum total of 6 hours of material. Our number one show for the whole season that was a total of 6 hours of material. If there's no greater compare or contrast, there it is. Of course, to be fair, the first two seasons of Sherlock both had their either minor or major issues in terms of one of the three events, I guess you could say, or like it's not really episodes, maybe installments would be the better way of putting it, kind of letting down the whole. And this was the first time that I think all three of the efforts really knocked it out of the park and just made it almost impossible for them not to come out on top. And I know that there are going to be some who say that that's not fair, but remember, each one of these installments counts twice. So it's easy for it to drop if there is a even one opinion that's off. So this being a consensus score, that really does put into perspective how much we all really enjoyed this season. We all had highest scores. And, oh, by the way, just in case you think that this is my bias going into it, I was the one with the lowest overall score out of the four of us. So there you
insanity,
go.
Insanity.
All right. Well, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Gary? I mean, it's been a little while since they ran, but.
Oh, no. Well, as you said, there were it doesn't comprise that many episodes, so it's not too hard to remember. You know, we opened up with Sherlock being dead, you know, and we sort of found out he wasn't and some of the mechanisms that they went through. And it was quite fun to watch John or Mr. Holmes sort of figure it out. And it was quite an enjoyable season. As always, it left you wanting more, and we have to wait so long, although I heard there's a Christmas special in the works, so we could possibly get lucky. But no, this season, it was just solid and strong, and it just built and went the whole way. Holmes, you know, revealing himself and coming out of, you know, being dead, was not unexpected, of course, but at the same time, I thought it was well done. I love how they left it ambiguous that we still don't really know for sure how he did it. We have ideas, but we don't know. And I like that it leaves it open. It keeps Holmes a little bit more mysterious, and which he should be.
Mm, yes. Edmund, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that did contribute to that overall quality of this season was the fact that they were treating it a little bit more as a whole. I mean, there were those through threads that started in the first episode and then were finally paid off in the third episode. We didn't really meet Milverton until the end, but there were those little mysterious shots of who might be behind all this stuff that was going on. That I think helped keep the quality high. That they were treating it more as a serialized run rather than trying to adapt the individual stories as they've been doing more in the previous seasons. And also the ongoing wonderful camaraderie between Holmes and Watson, between Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman, but then introducing Mary, which really really worked out well, both in terms of it feeling like a very believable relationship, but then also the mysteries of her past and how those played into both the overall events and also some of her insights into where she seemed to understand John a little bit better than John understands himself, which both made sense and made for some more intriguing character interactions and development.
Mm-hmm. And there we have it. I mean, we've gone over more than 40 shows for the season, and yeah, it's like I said, we kind of came in a way full circle on the season in terms of comparability, but we had a lot of banner things this season, not the least of which is a new top bar for some show to have to try to exceed. It's going to be extremely difficult to beat an average of 9. That's going to be quite an interesting race. It'll be good to see whether or not this season coming up even comes close to matching the kind of just sustained excellence that we seem to have had from a lot of shows this year. Just to say that so many of them were above average is really quite impressive. Any last thoughts, guys, on 2013-2014?
As you were saying about the overall quality, I hope we don't look back on this as a high point that we then wish we can get back to.
Well, the only thing that I wanted to say is just, and we talked about it, the just to round back again to the war show that we reviewed. You know, we went into this year hoping that Warehouse 13 was going to knock it out of the park, and they really totally let us down. I almost want to say it's a high water point of disappointment, because it was I never expected it to take the poor turn that it took. It was sad to see it.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. Let's see, how about you, Edmund? Anything else?
No, except I just wanted to say my previous remark was partially colored by when we're recording this, and it does seem like some of the summer shows are maybe not quite as high quality as the stuff we've just been talking about.
Well, yeah, but that's certainly giving us hope that the fall is going to bounce back nicely. Let's put it that way. Is that a nice way to put it? I think it is. All right, well, that's it. We're going to be back to our usual fare next time around, so see you then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.